Hey, biohackers. Earlier this year, I upgraded one of my favorite biohacks for longevity and overall wellness. I added in an NAD plus nasal spray, which is super easy and convenient to take every day. It gives me a natural energy boost, and I know I'm supporting my longevity. And if you've been a longtime listener, you probably have heard us talk about how important NAD is for overall health. And if you haven't heard of NAD plus, well, you're missing out on one of the most exciting breakthroughs in longevity and wellness. NAD plus is a powerful peptide found in every cell of your body. It fuels energy production, supports cellular repair, and plays a key role in slowing the aging process. But as we age, NAD levels decline, leading to fatigue, brain fog, and sluggish metabolism. That's where Effecty comes in. Effecty's NAD plus therapy helps restore those levels, giving you a natural energy boost, improving focus, and enhanced recovery, all with a simple injectable or a nasal spray for anyone wanting to go needle-free, like me. And the best part? It's 100% online with fast shipping, no hidden fees, and unlimited access to licensed doctors. You can start feeling the benefits in no time. Ready to recharge your body? Right now, our listeners get $50 off NAD Plus longevity treatments at effecty.com with code BIOHACKERBABES. That's EFFECTY.com and use BIOHACKERBABES at checkout to get $50 off. No hassles, no memberships, no hidden fees, just real results. So get started today.
Hey, biohackers, if you are using a protein powder, you really need to hear this. Recently, the Clean Label Project tested 160 top-selling protein powders in the U.S. and found that nearly half of them exceeded the Proposition 65 safety thresholds for lead. Okay, now that is definitely not what we want from products that are supposed to be supporting our health. And to make matters worse, most protein powder brands will not reveal their testing data on heavy metals like lead, so we could at least make an informed decision about what we want to expose ourselves to. This is why Renee and I are so happy that we found Puri's PW1 whey protein. Not only is it the most delicious protein powder I've ever tasted, but every single batch is third-party tested by the Clean Label Project for over 200 plus contaminants, and no product is ever sold unless it passes these tests. Puri is the only protein brand in the U.S. that has a Clean Label Project transparency certification, achieved because they make all of their third-party test results available via a QR code on label, so you get to see exactly how clean the product in your hands actually is. I don't like to play favorites, but the bourbon vanilla is so, so good. It blends really easily, and I feel so good consuming it because there are zero artificial ingredients, and there's no overly sweet or strange aftertaste like a lot of protein powders out there. Each serving provides 21 grams of minimally processed, clean, high-quality whey protein from pasture-raised cow's milk. No hormones, no GMOs, and no pesticides. If you want to make sure your protein powder isn't hiding any nasty chemicals, I'm telling you, switch over to PW. I'm confident you are going to love it. Here's even better news. If you check out Puri today, you get 20% off or almost a third off the price if you choose the already discounted subscription. Trust me, you're not going to want to run out of this stuff. To grab this deal, visit www.puri.com/biohackerbabes and use our promo code biohackerbabes. That's PURI.com/biohackerbabes. All right, biohackers, let's get back to the show.
We're digging deep and asking the questions we need to ask.
Years of stress, and not just emotional. I was depleting my body. I was malnourished.
I'm working out like crazy. I'm eating all these healthy foods. How could I not be well?
We have to get back to the basics.
We can change the way our genes are expressed.
Anyone that wants to improve their health or upgrade their health, they should be biohacking. My name is Renee.
And I'm Lauren. We are the Biohacker Babes. We're sisters, and we're joining forces to empower you to become your own biohacker and upgrade your life.
The Biohacker Babes podcast aims to create insight into the body's natural healing abilities, strengthen your intuition, and empower you with techniques and modalities to optimize your health and wellness. Because life is too short to not feel your best every single day.
This podcast offers health, fitness, and nutritional information and is designed for educational purposes only. You should not rely on this information as a substitute for, nor does it replace professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. If you have any concerns or questions about your health,
you should always consult with a physician or other healthcare professional. Thank you for joining us, and welcome to the show.
Welcome back to the Biohacker Babes podcast. I am Lauren. I'm here with my sister, Renee. And today we are doing part two with our friend Dasha Maximoff. If you did not hear part one with her last week, go back and listen to it right now. It is so amazing. She talked all about her experience with concussions, hacking her brain to better health, and then her introduction into the biohacking sphere is super interesting. She has a wealth of information to share, and it really lays a good foundation for what we're going to talk about today.
So maybe you found our podcast because you noticed that there is a lack of research regarding women and biohacking. It is very male-driven. So we're really excited to dive into the women's biohacking movement today with Dasha. And in my opinion, she really is kind of spearheading this movement because she is connecting people all across the world, researchers, experts, and people like you and me, or that includes our audience, that are trying to upgrade our health. So I'm so excited to have her back to really dive into this, how we can all just be a little bit better and contribute to this movement. Dasha, I will say no more. Where do you want to kick off?
Thank you. Good to be here. First off, let me correct a little component there. It is not my movement. It is ours. Absolutely ours.
But you are, been wonderfully aggressive in this movement.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really interesting, this movement, and you guys are pioneers in it as well, right? I think that this is like what we're trying to build is an ecosystem such that we can actually change the name of the game. And I think that it's the doctors, it's the researchers, it's the influencers, it's the entrepreneurs, it's the coaches, it's, you know, it's all of these people all together that if we bind together, then we can actually do something, right? And I think that you two are fantastical points of view in this because you're spreading the message and you're also so knowledgeable in each of your areas. So come right back at you. Thank you.
Thank you. So tell us a little bit about Wealth Co, or if you want to talk about the Women's Biohacking Collective that was prior to that.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think there's a couple of things here. So Women's Biohacking Collective, effectively, last year I was working on the Health Optimization Summit, running all the operations there. And so the Health Optimization Summit was in London. We had a whole host of different speakers, kind of alternative healthcare all the way to modern, you know, stem cells and stem cell research. The problem that I saw there, though, was that as I was traveling around to a number of different conferences and meeting people left, right, and center, there wasn't really the perspective on women's health specifically. There wasn't, you know, biohacking, I think, is fantastic. And this movement of biohacking is absolutely tremendous in that we are pushing the needle forward on personalized health. We are taking control of our health individually. We are understanding how this incredible thing of our body is all interconnected. And yet we don't actually look at that from the lens of a woman always, or it doesn't sound like that voice has really been, you know, been pushed forward. And I think there's a couple of, when we start thinking about the, you know, if we call it the women's biohacking movement or women's health in general, or whatever we want to call it, right? Ultimately it's your own health optimization. I think we should look at three different things, and it's probably kind of why haven't we yet done the research, or what's been going on in the past, what can we look to in the future, where do we want to go, and then what can we start doing today, right? To me, that's kind of the way that I think about this. So, you know, when people say, oh, well, you know, women haven't been researched, and this is insane, and this is ridiculous, and, you know, yes, and there's many sides to that story. And I think it behooves us to look at that side. And I think, so first and foremost, if we're thinking about research ultimately in institutes is tough. It takes a long time. It's very expensive. It requires multiple points, you know, multiple subjects, and a lot of different analyses. And in terms of science, in the science that we have today, it is quite reductionist. So you have to look at very, very specific, you know, controlled elements in order to say definitively that one causes the other. if you don't do that, then in the name of science, and I'm saying that with air quotes, right? In the name of science, you end up not being able to have a definitive answer and then publish it in the top journals, right? That is another element of it as well, in terms of research of what actually gets into those top journals. There's politics involved there as well. I think the other element about research is that we're pretty new to this. I mean, we are very lucky right now that we are at the crux where we can start using technology to really look into it. But, you know, backtrack a generation, backtrack two generations, right? Research was always focused on the diseases that could benefit, or the disease prevention or understanding a disease that was going to impact 100% of people rather than 50% of people, right? So if you were to look at a disease of, you know, even, I don't know, obesity, right? Let's take that as a big one, right? Okay, well, we're going to look at obesity as it impacts the entire population, men and women, because we've never done any research on obesity. You know, my grandmother had no idea what obesity was because, again, back in her generation, nobody studied obesity. It wasn't a place of research. So research in general has been quite young. It's quite new. So yes, in the past 50 years, we've done a lot. The point that I'm trying to make is I think it makes sense that we can be, you know, annoyed, or we can say, well, yes, we haven't done any research with women. Yes. But, you know, there is reasons for that.
And, you know, intentioned.
It wasn't necessarily ill-intentioned. I think the other element is that we as women are quite complicated, as all the men probably know. And we as women also know, you know, we have our, I mean, take for example, ages 25 to 35, right? In that 10-year gap, 10-year age range from age 25 to 35, you can have women who are menstruating. You can have women who are not menstruating. You can have women who are pregnant, who have just given birth, who gave birth 10 years ago, right? You know, and that's five different types of women in one 10-year age gap. So if somebody tells me that it's, you know, it's easy to study women, well, that's impossible, right? Because in that 10 years, right, we have women who stem all different sides of the hormonal cycle and all different sides of the life cycle. So, you know, I think it's, yes, we are very, very complicated. That being said, that doesn't mean that we can't be studied, but I think it is also interesting just to see, you know, go into the history of research in the sense that there have been things that have not been done right. So some of them being, you know, in 1977, childbearing women were prohibited from being involved in research. 1977, they were absolutely prohibited. They said, okay, no women allowed in research.
Not that long ago.
Not that long ago. Right? Now, fast forward, 1985, they realized that by not having women in studies, that we were actually compromising health quality research, right? So for example, heart disease, or obesity, even for that matter, right? But let's say heart disease. A heart attack for a man is very, very different, or the symptoms or how it shows itself is very, very different than how it is for a woman. So in 1985, which was, again, really not that long ago, they finally said, you know what, actually, we do need to have women in these studies because we're showing that it's quite different, right? That a heart attack for women versus men is showing us quite different.
I'm just curious, was it a group of men that discovered that or had that forethought?
I'm not really
sure. Or women like, listen.
Not really, yeah, that I'm not quite sure about.
Doesn't matter, but it's great that someone got turned on to it.
Yeah. So then fast forward to just actually 2003. So literally in the 2000s, they finally, I think it's called the Women's Health Initiative or something like that, where they finally said, actually, we are noticing that yes, we are including women in research. However, we're not including women in the analysis of the research. So very, very interesting. So you have 10,000 people who are patients, or, you know, in your trials. Yeah, you're saying, okay, 5,000 are men, 5,000 are women. Fantastic. But then when you actually look at the research, you start noticing that of the research that's been published, you know, 3,000 people are taken out, let's say, right? I'm making these numbers up, by the way. Now, of those 3,000, 2,500 are women, right? Mm-hmm. Why? that not many people are going into, or they weren't looking into that necessarily. But there are usually, again, in research, there's probably good reason. It could be that a woman started the trial out and she wasn't pregnant and now she is, right? A woman, you know, whatever the reasons are. But the point is that just in 2003, they did an audit, and they noticed that many of the studies, or a number of the studies, let's put it that way, actually the analysis was not very balanced. So, you know, I think to me, what we're seeing with, in terms of the past, it's that one, we did our best in certain things, right? And research is tough, and that we are going to study the things that are going to impact the larger majority of humanity, which is 100% of the population instead of 50% of the population. So, okay, great. Now we know that history. Now we can move forward, right? And we can actually look into how we can change that. So to me, I mean, I think the next part of the evolution of where could we potentially go with women's biohacking or women's health, or to me, it's one, we get more involved in our own health, right? So I'm in my 30s. I only recently started really understanding my cycle. That is preposterous. You know, that is...
You're not the only one though.
Yeah.
A lot of women.
Yeah. There's just not that education out there.
Mm-hmm. And so to me, that needs to change, right? And it seems to me that is changing, because right now I'm, you know, feminine technology as an industry is starting to boom. Last year alone, there was, I think, 800 million in funding for companies that are specifically focused on feminine technology. Now, when I say feminine technology, I mean, you know, things to wearables. Understand. Exactly. It could be wearables. It could be just using technology for understanding ourselves. So, you know, a technology that's enabling breastfeeding in an easier manner, right? So a lot of women right now are traveling a lot. Where are they pumping? You know, how can they pump? How can they make it easier? So is there a technology around that can help? Is there a technology to better understand your fertility? Is there, you know, that kind of stuff? So femtech, I mean, one app out there that's pioneering in femtech is Clue. Clue is an app, a fertility tracking app. And you can go in every single day and start putting inputs in regarding your cycle, also regarding the food that you're eating, regarding your temperature, you know, a number of different things, so that you actually start to understand the patterns that are going on. And so I think to me, that's the evolution. It's an evolution where, well, again, one, we are just more educated. And the way that we get more educated is by tracking the data is the first bit. But then in my opinion, also bringing in the side of intuition. And to me, that's where biohacking is really fantastic. And that's why, you know, our name initially was Women's Biohacking Collective, and we've changed it to Women's Health Company, or sorry, Women's Health Community, Wealth Co. Because biohacking is wonderful. However, I find it to be potentially too data-driven in how it's been in the past, right? Mm-hmm. So biohacking is yeah, it's fantastic. I mean, I have all the gizmos and gadgets, right? But I also, to me, biohacking is not just about technology. It's also about integration of that technology and of those habits into your daily life. So it's integrating grounding. It's integrating the sunrise. It's integrating, you know, a cold shower. Now, is a cold shower biohacking, or is it just what my grandmother used to do? Both.
Yeah. Right. You know? But so it's also asking questions that, one, your doctor is probably not going to ask. And that's interesting to bring in the intuition part, because your doctor is not going to have intuition about how you're feeling or what's going on with your body. And it sounds like it requires more work, but that's the empowerment part, right? Like, you can do the work to start upgrading your health.
Yeah. And I think that's an interesting point, because to me, that's how I really got into this world of getting interested and getting intrigued by what's going on. I came at it because I didn't find answers within Western medicine, really, but it's also because I got interested of, wait, my, you know, my brain is not working as it should be, or my, you know, I'm curious about what happens if I do eat something different, or, you know, whatever that was. So that curiosity factor, I think, is tremendous in the biohacking world. And so it's, you know, when people start saying that the new doctor is the patient, that is where I hope that the future is going to go with women's health. I mean, in health in general, but it's going back to saying each and every individual should, I don't like using the word should, but is going to be interested in their own evolution and their own mm-hmm. and how their bodies work. Because what we've done over the past 2 decades or so is outsourced our health to specialists and to doctors and to people with authority, whatever that authority is. It could be, you know, influencers, it could be whoever it is, it could be doctors, it could be our whatever it is, right? Now we've outsourced our health, but in reality, you're the one that's living with your body. You're the one that has to be in this day in and day out. So that intuition and that understanding of, wait, this isn't going to work for me, is, in my opinion, a lot more powerful, or at least as powerful as going to a specialist and that specialist saying, you're missing this nutrient, or you need to do this test to understand something. So yeah, so I think in terms of the future and where I see this going, I see it going in, again, education and learning about ourselves, learning how things are interconnected and testing it out on ourselves. So in the future, you know, I see it as an N of one, which is the foundation of biohacking. I also see it as a community that's sharing the N of ones, so that way we can all combine together, have better information, have better knowledge. I see that going forward, it's about citizen science in order for us to get to future kind of real science, again, air quotes, real science, right? So what I mean by that is, going back to research is quite, again, it's quite difficult, and it's difficult to get a grant. It's difficult to get a number of people wanting to be part of a 6-week trial, right? It's difficult that when women are so variant and so different, you know, along their cycle, along their life cycle. So to me, the first step is to have citizen science before we can graduate to having university science. So as an example, what I would say is, if we think about fasting right now is one of the big things in biohacking, right? Or it's been for a while. Intermittent fasting, OMAD, all these different types of kind of a 3-day fast, all these different things. Now, if you look out there and you say, okay, well, is fasting good for me as a woman? You'll get a number of different answers. You'll get certain people saying 16 hours, that's the max, right? Or 24 hours, that's the max. If you fast too much, then that's going to impact your cycle going forward. Then you have other people who are saying, yeah, don't worry about it. You know, not a problem. Your body will come back online, if you will. So
these are mostly people's opinions, right? Like if you Google that, you're just getting articles from magazines. You're not getting scientific journals.
Precisely.
Yeah. When I heard a doctor speak, a female doctor speak about the effect on hormones from fasting. And she said 14 hours seems to be the optimal amount, which I can understand from the hormonal perspective. But I'm wondering, were most of her patients coming in because they had adrenal and thyroid problems? So that's why they couldn't fast? You know what I mean?
Yeah, what are the variables going into that?
But everyone she was seeing, 14 hours was working. So
precisely. And that's exactly the challenge, right? If you're only looking at people who are coming in with an ailment, then that's already a bias, right? And so we're always going to be biased to some extent. So I guess, so the idea is, well, let's say again, with fasting, what if we had 5,000 women, right? Each of whom are going to self-select to do a fasting challenge every month. And every single month, it's every third Sunday, let's say, or, you know, find a time. And then over the course of 6 months, you can see how certain women, how women do, right? You can have women self-select and provide information on their mood, on their sleep, on their, et cetera, like, you know, 5-6 different things. And then over the course of 6 months, you now have a sample set about with citizen science to say, this is what we've found. So maybe you find that those women, you know, of those 5,000 women, those women who are in perimenopause, they do really well with fasting for 24 hours. But those women who are, you know, actively cycling and kind of a lower, younger, they don't do very well with fasting. Or, you know, or maybe fasting is fantastic when you combine it with HIIT. Maybe, you know, or, you know, there's a myriad of different things that we could potentially learn from that. Now, if we learn that, And we had that pointer, that arrow to say, hey, listen, we've found X. Now, granted, that's anecdotal and that's just looking, you know, kind of observational. That's not ultimately going to be where we want to, you know, where we end. But now we have that information that we can go to a university. We can go to, you know, to somebody and say, listen, there's potentially something here. Now go write a grant. And here you go. Here is something that's an inkling of something that you can potentially go and properly study in a controlled environment with, you know, with all the different right controls so that we can then get into Nature. We can then get into the scientific journals. But I mean, to me, I think that's where we need to go. And that's where we need to start. We need to start at the individual to say, I'm curious to see what this means for my body and my optimal health. And then if we graduate and we expand that out to be more of a communal thing, then because of the community, we can then go in and do something with it from a proper research standpoint.
So how do we start participating for our audience listening today? Where do we start? How do we get this thing going?
Yeah. So we've started WealthCo. Right now it's an online platform. We're kicking off in May. And yeah, just go on our website, wealth.community. So it's whealth.community. And you can join there. I mean, it's evolving. And again, the intention is to combine the ecosystem of doctors, researchers, entrepreneurs, and lay women like us, who unfortunately we just haven't had the education because it hasn't been in the dialogue, right? We don't, you know, we get educated about, you know, balancing physics equations in high school, but we don't get educated about, you know, the luteal phase or what happened, you know, could it be that when you're having dandruff or you're having, you know, hair kind of fall out when you're brushing your hair, maybe that is a hormonal imbalance, maybe, right? Those types of things are not being connected. And the more that we can actually enter that into the dialogue and have, and even open up the dialogue. And that's the intention, right? The intention with WealthCo is to open that dialogue, be it on the forum or with our Q&As. So we're going to be having Q&As with specialists. You mentioned Dr. Carrie Jones, she'll be coming on as well. And having those types of things, because to me, ultimately, education is the way that we'll all together be able to understand more about our bodies, because we are freaking complicated. we are really, really complicated, lovely ladies. But you know, we need to learn from each other, because again, while we're complicated as women, you know, as a gender, we are quite similar. So, you know, the PMDD that my friend is having, or, you know, the postpartum depression that not many women are talking about, but many women have, or, you know, the fact that a lot of women just don't have much libido these days, right? Or, you know, or just simple things like, you know, understanding how your nail health can really tell you a lot about your actual health. Those types of things, they have a lot of scientific validity to them, but unfortunately, it's not being pushed out in the modern, kind of amongst modern women. Yeah, so that's the idea. Join us, and then together, hopefully, we can also kind of change the game and change the future for not only ourselves, but also for our little ones.
I love that. I agree. There need to be way more whys and could it be's just in the questioning. And I like I like the collective aspect that we're bringing women together, because women as a species used to physically be so close to each other and helping each other through these things, through our cycles and through our troubles. So even if we could just do that online, that's so powerful.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, ultimately, once this corona decides to untangle from ourselves, we'll go back to, hopefully, we'll go back to also having the local chapters. So last year we were starting with that. So the idea there was, I think we had about six different cities around the globe that were starting to come online. That being the idea being, you know, having a local presence and actually getting to meet people face to face. Because it's interesting to me that once you start getting into this sphere of health, it's quite difficult to start having the same conversation with your existing friends, because oftentimes, you know, you're seen as crazy or you're seen as, you know, it's a change, right?
100%. Just having a conversation about the birth control pill.
Oh my gosh.
Yep, exactly. I mean, I was talking to a friend of mine saying that, oh, well, you know, she has girls who are starting to menstruate, and her doctor immediately said, we'll put them on the pill. right? Because it was such a tough menstruation. She was having a lot of pain. Now, a woman's brain is continuing to evolve until around age 22. They say between 22 and 25. So if you are a little one, you know, a teenager that is, you know, starting to be on the pill at age 16, age 17, what are you actually doing to your brain chemistry between the ages, right, of 17 and 22 when your brain stops growing and stops changing? You know, those hormones.
Shutting everything down.
Yep. Yep. So this is the conversation, right? It's the conversation of, yeah, let's have both sides. Let's understand. Let's have a foundation based in science. Let's have a foundation in evidence. I want to understand, you know, if there is a study that's out there that only has 5 participants, that doesn't necessarily say that it's a bad study, right? But let's call that out as well. Let's call it out and say, this is the beginning of a study. We need to grow it further, right? Or let's call out, frankly, BS science as well, because that's out there, that is out there, and it's understandable that's out there. But also teaching us how to even read these scientific journals, teaching us what is good science, what's not good science, as well as bringing in that N of one, bringing in that potentially anecdotal or individual story. You know, I know that I have specific things that I do that sound completely crazy, but work really well for me. And if they work well for me, well, yeah, on the forum, I will put that out there. On the community, I will tell people whatever it is. I can't think of anything right now, but I will say that. But calling that out again as, this is my story, this is my experience. And so maybe this will help somebody else, but this is not something that's replicable necessarily from a scientific standpoint. So it's having both, you know, if you think about it as a barbell, right? Having both sides of that barbell, having the really strong, controlled, science-based, evidence-backed research that's out there, and then balancing that with also our personal stories, which also have quite a bit of validity to them as well. You know, sure, maybe some yeah, old school methodology that, you know, we've never thought of or we never heard of, or there hasn't been anything that's studied about it, but really does have a good benefit. So, you know, my mom, for example, has, I remember her telling a friend of ours, you know, if you have during your first trimester, cranberry juice is really good. Is there any scientific validity to that? I don't know. But did it help her? Absolutely. So it's a combination of the two and right, supporting ourselves as women in that community aspect of it.
And Dasha, I think somewhere where you can really help a lot of women with what you're building is the topic of infertility.
Okay.
I will say, yeah, I guess I'll just open up about it. Why not? I struggled with infertility for many years and I started trying to get pregnant when I was 24. Nothing happened for 6 months, went to the fertility clinics. The doctor said, you have to do IVF. There's no options. Well, like, can I try acupuncture? Should I change my diet? Like, I've been under a lot of stress for many years. She says, no, none of that matters. And I wish so badly that I had a community like you are building right now that I could go and talk to. Because at that age, all of my friends were just popping out 2-3 babies. I literally had no one to talk to, including my doctor, who thought I was crazy for asking questions. I didn't go that route. I left the office that day. I went home and I started writing my thesis on nutrition for infertility. Mm-hmm. So I learned a lot. And I know you keep bringing up the point of education. And I learned a lot about that topic because of my personal story. But I just think there's so many women out there struggling with that. And I think, again, you building this community is going to be an amazing platform to share.
Thank you. I'm sorry to hear that. That is something that is very, very tough. And I'm sorry to hear that you had to go through that.
Thank you. I'm in a really good place. I don't want anyone to be like, you know,
yeah,
it's not woe is me. I'm in a really great place right now. It's just sad. I think a lot of women don't have anywhere to turn to.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
And I think that is exactly it, right? Because it's these types of topics that appear to be taboo or appear to be uncomfortable or even, I mean, I can say it for myself, right? You know, with my concussion, for example, I felt, well, what's wrong with me, right? Something is like, I have done something wrong. And mm-hmm, in reality, if right, we really pull back and we think of ourselves as, you know, as to some extent what we are, which is a host, right? We're a host for a bunch of organisms, right? A whole bunch of bacteria and, you know, and a bunch of little cells. So it's like, it's, you are not your symptoms, right? And this is not something that, you know, I felt like I couldn't even speak about my concussion. I couldn't speak about these things because that would show weakness on myself, or that there was, I mean, a whole, like, you get into your head as well about, you know, a disease or a symptom or an ailment, and how that reflects on you as an individual and what that means about you. Or also then you throw in on top of that, you know, the idea of other people, and they're not comfortable, or they don't know what to say because they don't know how to help you or not help you, or if you even want help. And then the idea of support or not, you know? So it's all these different elements combined together. And so the idea of that community, which is saying, hey, listen, one, you are not your symptoms. Two, we are all on this journey, right? And I think that's what I tremendously love about the biohacking world and in general this movement of optimal health, is that all of us are on that trajectory somewhere, right? So, and we've all, a lot of us at least, have hit rock bottom, right? In one way, shape, or form, and whatever we define that to be. Now, that rock bottom means that we've also likely elevated away from that rock bottom, and we're a step above, or two steps above, or five steps above, whatever it is, right? And the nice thing is that once we really start thinking about our health as a stepping stone and as a journey, then, you know, we can play up and down. We can see that there's a goal of these ultra Olympians or Spartan racers or just people who have good health, right? And start saying, okay, that's my goal. I want to get there. And then simultaneously, it's in this community, in this network, in this collective, right? There, you're going to see, or I've seen, you know, women and men who are a couple of steps below me. I don't want to say below, but, you know, they're on their journey and they're looking for help about concussions, right? And so because we're all on this journey together, what I find really beautiful is that we can all look up to each other in certain ways, because there's certain things that you ladies are doing that I have no idea about that I'm going to learn from you, right? And then similarly, we're all, because we've all been on this health journey and looking at this from the perspective of every day I can get better, rather than the, oh, this is horrendous and this is my symptom and I am my symptom, you know, then we can bring other people up as well. So it's kind of that ladder, and where do we sit today? Because today I could be on the highest, or, you know, slightly higher, and tomorrow I might be absolutely on the bottom, but understanding that we're not our symptoms. So thank you for sharing that. Yeah. Thank you.
Well, thank you for putting it that way. I think you said it very beautifully. I appreciate that.
Such a wonderful opportunity. So
yeah. So I mean, I see a lot of work ahead. And I see, you know, with research and with women's health, I'm really excited about it though, because, you know, women, we are really starting to be open about these things. And I think that that's the part that, you know, 5 years ago, we couldn't have done this, right? So 5 years ago, we didn't have, you know, all these technologies. 5 years ago, we didn't have the mentality of I'm willing to share, because we didn't have a sharing economy until just recently. So, you know, I think that there's all these, if you think about, you need a number of different things to happen in order for true change to happen, right? And in this case, we've got, people are more open. There's the technology is there for tracking as well as diagnosing the, you know, and we are more wanting and desiring of a community. So I feel like there's so many different elements of this ecosystem that are just right now to go and make it happen. And I also like that people are very much in the mindset of calling out fake news and calling out when things really aren't there. And it's not done with ego, and it's not done with, you know, wanting to tear somebody down. It's truly in the name of, listen, let's figure out what is true, what is going to work, you know? So I like that there's all these types of, you know, components to it that are going to push us forward.
Yeah. It's perfect timing for this, really.
So yeah, everybody so awesome. Join it. Let's go. Let's keep going.
Let's do it. Yeah. So, Dasha, I just want to be mindful of your time. To close this out, we like to ask our guests for one piece of advice that our audience can take away and start thinking about, working on, doing immediately.
What they can do immediately.
Yeah. What do you want the audience to know that they can, as soon as they hit end on this podcast, what can they start working on?
I have like five different things.
First thing that comes to mind.
Yeah.
I know. We could listen to you for 12 more hours.
Sorry, I just talk a lot. I just talk a lot, dude.
I love it.
We'll just have part 10, 11.
I would say go within and realize that you are your best guru. You are the best teacher. So start listening to yourself more so than listening to everybody else around you. I think I just recently started doing that, and it's scary as all hell, but it is probably the best thing, because that is now dictating what I read, what I look at, rather than just blindly following anybody who is blindly just following whoever's out there or whatever authority figure has been pushed on me. So yeah, I would say start by really tuning in and listening to yourself and saying, what is the first thing that I need to look at, rather than what everybody else is advising you to do.
I love it.
It's a great one.
Great.
Thank you. Dasha, thank you so much for hanging out with us for all this time. You're such a force. You're so well-informed. And thank you for sharing your heart and your mind with our audience. So wonderful.
It's wonderful to be here. And I can't wait to actually get to see you both in person once this is all over.
I know. It's going to be so great.
Pick a city. We'll all meet.
Done. So for our audience to find you, how can they find you? Just run through the list of social media stuff.
So Wealth Co, W Health Co on Instagram, also whealth.community as a website. And then on social media, I'm not that active because it kind of sucks my soul, but _-of_health would be my Instagram.
Okay. Awesome. And we'll link to all those in the show notes too for everybody.
So all the amazing books that you talked about as well and tech. So great. All right, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us, Dasha. And thank you to our audience for tuning in. We will see you next time.
Love this episode of the Biohacker Babes podcast? Head over to Apple Podcasts to subscribe, rate, and leave a review. We truly appreciate your support.
Until then, happy biohacking.